Radio.
Saw a headline just as I was going to press, if that's what you call it, last Thursday. It said Dallas has rejected the Patriot Act. I think that's a big step. It would be my guess. Dallas is the second biggest city in Texas, but hell, it could be the biggest. I just don't know. I don't care. But for one of the biggest cities in the Smirk's home state to reject his power grab of the Constitution, for them to reject it, I think is a big deal. Now I'm going to read you something that I do not believe. I just cannot believe this. I'm reading it with my own eyes in black and white ink. USA Today, Thursday, February 26, page 5A. They had a USA Today CNN Gallup poll. Concerns about the Patriot Act. My God, I can't believe this. Do you approve of a provision that allows federal agents to secretly search the home of a U.S. citizen without informing that person of the search for an unspecified period of time? 71% said sure. It's okay for the federal government to come into my house without a reason and search. This is crazy. Can you get any crazier than this? Yes, it's okay for the federal government to come into my house to secretly search. I guess that implies that, well, you know, if I leave to go to the store, the agent's sitting across the street, run over here. I guess they pick the lock. I guess they call the alarm company. Who knows? But for them to secretly search my house while I'm at the grocery store without a reason. Once again, General Clark, when I asked him about this, he said, the Patriot Act ought to be just like everything else. If you think a guy is a suspect in something, if you suspect him of X and Y, go to a judge. If the judge agrees, then you come into the house. But just the idea that Ashcroft and his goons, they think old Bart might be tied up in something terroristic, so they're going to search my house while I'm gone? That sounds like trouble. That sounds like big, big trouble to me. Do you approve of a provision that requires financial institutions to identify account holders to federal agents conducting terrorism or money laundering investigations? A warrant would be better, but this is not anywhere near as bad as searching your house. Good God. Not that I even got anything in the house, but the idea of a team of agents going through my house the way they did like Michael Jackson or something. What they said with Michael Jackson, 60 men went through his house for either hours or days. You know they just had the best time of their lives. Is it okay to require a bank to identify account holders, customers, conducting terrorism money laundering investigations? Well, I don't think they have a choice. Seems to me if the government calls and says, is Bart money laundering massive amounts of money to fund his OxyContin habit, maybe it's not such a bad thing that the government knows. You know, things are set up for a reason. I work for a company where we sent money to Japan to buy video games, and we regularly would send them $9,500, and we'd wait a few days and send them another $2,000, whatever, because if they sell us X amount of games for $12,000, the boss, yeah, he was in laundering a little bit of money, but he just seems to me the whole purpose of that law is because if you're laundering millions of dollars, now you got to do hundreds of transactions, and that's so time consuming that it's just a hurdle they put up to make it more difficult. So in that regard, putting $9,900 in a bank, I disagree that they got rushed on that, because that's the whole point. If you put $9,900 in an account cash, then that means there's no breaking of the law. To me, it's like the speed limit's being 75 and you go 74. How can you arrest a man for going 74 into 75 when 75 is the posted limit? So if the government says anything over 10,000 must be reported, if you put in $9,900, you're obeying the law. That ought not to be a crime, in my opinion. But anyway, what the hell is up with 71% of the public saying it's okay for federal agents to search? Remember, they also said a citizen's house. We're not talking about Khalid Alil, who's over here on a student visa from Yemen. No, we're not talking about that. They're talking about a U.S. citizen. It's okay for the government to come into your house when you're not there and search it and not tell you, not even give you a reason. Say you come home and there's six agents in your house and you say, what the F are you doing here? They say, shut up. That don't sound like America. But I guess we're getting more and more of that with the illegal, never elected usurper in charge of our Constitution. While I was doing the first of many re-edits on this Patriot Act, I remembered the NRA's position. Think how long, think how many decades that we have heard from the NRA that the primary reason you have to have lots and big caliber and ready to fire guns in the house is because what if the government goes nuts someday? Sometimes they cite self-protection, burglars, etc., etc., but more than often, for years I listened to G. Gordon Liddy talk about when the government agents come, you know they're going to be wearing vests, so shoot them in the head. Shoot the ATF in the head because you've got a right to your property, you've got a right to your home, you got a right to protect your family, and when the government loses control and the government tries to take you for no reason, that you have to fight back. But the minute the unelected moron got in office, he rewrote the Constitution and passed this stupid Patriot Act to where any time Ashcroft or Bush or who knows, anytime anybody gets a whim, they can come into your house secretly and search it. Hell, speaking of that, if they decide to come to your house and just take you and put you in a dark hole till the end of time without a phone call or a lawyer or a reason or an arraignment or an appearance before a judge or anything, they're going to do it. We don't get G. Gordon Liddy in Oklahoma anymore, but I assume he's all for this idiotic Patriot Act that takes away everything they have said for decades. After decades of get the government off my back, now they're saying if Bush is in charge, more government is better. We want as many searches without warrants. We want as many physical seizures as possible. Corpus, whatever it's called, where they just grab your body and throw you in jail without a reason. The Republicans are all for this now. After decades, now they're all for it because the unelected monkey is in charge. Are they still going to be for this if a Democrat is ever allowed to assume power again? Remember the fit they threw in Waco. How dare the government invade this peaceful rapist house with the armor-piercing bullets? How dare the government bother this private man without a reason? Oh, how many times did they scream, posse comitatus? How dare they turn the military on the people? But now they're all for it. And it's up to the liberals to argue the common sense of what about the Constitution, but of course they are silent. The liberals are silent when the Constitution is rewritten or destroyed. They don't care. Because Mr. Rove might not like it if they raise their damn voice. What is wrong with this country that they just don't care? How many of you are old enough to remember the Danny Thomas show? I think it was called Make Room for Daddy. But he probably had more than one show, so. But the one I'm talking about, I think, is Make Room for Daddy. One day on Make Room for Daddy, they introduced a pilot for another show called The Andy Griffith Show. I'll bet you didn't know that, unless you're really old. For this pilot, Danny Thomas was a little out of character. He was kind of playing a jerk, we'll say. And he went speeding through Mayberry. And Andy pulled him over and gave him a ticket, seems like it was for $5. And this is, of course, in the late 50s, early 60s. And the way I remember it, which is not always the way it happened, Danny Thomas gave him a 10 and said, "There you go, Sheriff. Thanks for, you know, it was great meeting you. Have a nice life," and started to drive off. And Andy said, hold on. That's a, again, making this up, $200 fine. So Danny Thomas said, "I'm not paying $200. So Andy said, "Then you're going to jail." So Andy took Danny Thomas back to jail and locked him up. As shows tended to be in the late 50s, early 60s, this was a real sappy thing where Danny Thomas, after meeting Barney and Opie and Aunt Bee and probably Otis the town drunk. Anyway, he changed his mind. He was such a jerk at the opening of the show. And by the end of the show, he had learned his lesson that it's wrong to disrespect other people, and such and such. And, oh, it was so sweet and tear-jerking. Why do I bring that up? There's a letter to the editor in today's paper. It says, link fines to income. The whole point of the Andy Griffith, Danny Thomas thing, apparently Andy on his own decided that the fines for speeding today was $200 instead of the usual five, which is probably not the most legal thing in the world, but he decided since $5 meant nothing to the rich movie star driving the brand new convertible, speeding through the town on his, with his... the rich Hollywood guy speeding through town in his new convertible needed to be taught a lesson, and $5 wouldn't do it, so that's why I slapped the $200 on him. Why do I bring this up? In today's newspaper, which today is not always the day you hear it, today is the day I'm speaking it, because I can only do these shows live. In today's newspaper, letter to the editor, link fines to income. The speeding epidemic is the latest example of people's self-absorption and the me-first attitude. Here in San Diego, I have to drive 75 to 80 miles an hour to stay with the flow. Ready? Here in San Diego, I often have to drive 70 to 80 miles an hour to stay with the flow of traffic in the slow lane. The secret to slowing cars down is to adopt Finland's approach. The fines on the tickets are not fixed. They're related to income. Thus, a millionaire might pay $50,000 for a speeding ticket rather than $200. This is a good idea. This, I'm sure it's socialism and Marxism and Leninism and every other damn ism you can think of, but it makes sense. Just in the example that I gave you about Andy Griffith and Danny Thomas. If you're rich, you can afford to drive through town and say FY to the law, because if you get caught, you hand them a $10 bill and you're on your way, and you don't care, and you never learn your lesson, and you speed through the next town. So yes, I think that's a good idea, and it should be across the board. All, I think every fine, just like income taxes, should be related to your income. So what do you do if you're broke and you have to pay a fine? I hadn't crossed that bridge yet. But I think that's a good idea. Link fines to income. That would make a better America. It would raise more money. Everybody wins. No reason not to. Another letter I saw called Don't Manipulate Data. What is this argument against same-sex marriage that says children are better off raised by a mother and a father? The studies cited look at single parents versus heterosexual parent couples. Yes, the results say it's better to have a mother and a father, but the rest of the sentence needs to be, than it is to have just a mother or just a father. Many studies do not address two mother or two father options. That said, any manipulation of data to get the emotional save the kid response is a shame. This is true. The Nazis on talk radio, and people like Dr. Laura, the female one, they always say how it's better for two parents to be there. Well, sure. The Republicans say a child will grow up better if he's in a house with a mother and a father. And we all agree on that, let's say. But let's say dad runs off when the baby's 1 year old and he grows up without a father and he gets into shoplifting and drug abuse. Now, the Republicans aren't going to say, the poor guy, he grew up without a father, he didn't have a proper role model, we understand why he strayed from the path. No, they say, screw that kid, throw him in jail, lock him up, throw away the key, we don't care, we got to be tough with these little sons of, you know what, we're going to be tough, we're going to be mean, we're going to be cruel, and it doesn't matter if he grew up without a father figure. Well, how can they have it both ways? How can they stress how important it is to have two parents in the house, two, one of each? And at the same time, throw the book as hard as I can at some kid who grew up without that advantage. Seems like it might be compassionate to consider their own advice about a kid who grew up without a father figure. Makes sense to me. How about you? If Martha Stewart has any kind of lawyer, she's going to beat this rap. Assuming the USA Today is giving a semi-reasonable account of what happened. Check this out. Headline, defense rests after calling only one witness for Stewart. Testimony ended in the Martha Stewart trial after defense lawyer summoned only one witness to defend her against charges of making false statements to investigators. Stephen Pearl, an attorney at Who Cares, testified about notes he took at Stewart's February 2002 meeting with prosecutors accusing her... with prosecutors looking into her sale of M-Clone stock. The government has accused Stewart of lying at that meeting when she told investigators that she wasn't sure if her broker left a message for her on that day, the day of the stock trade. But 2 weeks ago, Stewart's personal assistant told jurors that on January 31st, a month later, just days before her meeting with prosecutors, Stewart sat down with a, well, none of that matters. In response to that damaging testimony, Pearl's notes from the February 4 meeting indicate the prosecutors asked Stewart only if she knew what time the broker called, and she said no. So they're charging her with lying about the broker having called when what she answered was when they said, do you remember the time he called? She says, no. How are they going to charge her with lying if she says, I don't know what time he called? And even that, you could Clintonian break it down. I don't know if it was 3:05 or 3:10 or 3:30. I don't know what time he called. But they're trying to bust her for lying to investigators about a phone call when the question they asked was, what time did he call? So Martha Stewart, it appears to my non-legally trained mind, is factually innocent. Assuming this guy's notes, you know, if the witness is believable, which is true in every case. But all this time, they've been going after her for lying when the question they asked was, what time did the guy call? That is really, really, really stretching things. In closing, it says, although it's a fine point, Pearl's memo suggests that Stewart never said she didn't know if Bakanovic called that day, only that she didn't know what time he called. Jurors could infer that Stewart was therefore not lying to investigators. Well, yeah, anybody with a brain could infer that. There's a difference between did he call and what time did he call. Yeah, both those questions have some of the same words in them. But hey, if she's on trial for not knowing what time the guy called, is this just not another example? Selective prosecution. They picked her out because she's a friend of Clinton's, and the vulgar pig boy and Skilling and Kenny Lay and all those other guys have yet to come to trial. They're going to skate because they're a friend of the governor's, friend of the monkey in charge of the presidency. But since Stewart's friend is a former president, the new president sends his dogs after her. This is not fair, Martha. I don't guess anybody's your friend these days, Martha, but if you didn't do it, by God, I don't want to see you convicted.
Don't touch that dial. Though you don't have a dial because you're probably listening to this on the computer.